Mitzvah, everyone. The Slichos begin with a pizmon, famously known as the Shema El Harino Ve'El HaTefila. That being the refrain. It's noteworthy that the terminology is so mild. We're asking the Ribbono Shel Olam to hear Rina, which does not have a sense of alarm to it at all. It means something uplifting in sound like song, and Tefillah, which is prayer. That is to emphasize that where there is mention of Tzoakim, there is mention of Asirasam, which is fervent prayer. Nevertheless, the idea of coming before HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the sense of being uplifted and the sense of coming with the typical tefillos that make up all of our avodas HaKodesh in Beis HaKnesses all year is included. It is implying that we're not going to do anything so very different from what it is that we do all the time. It's a reminder that we come to shul on a regular basis. That we're here, so many of us, 7 days a week. It's just that b'motzoi menucha kidamnucha tchila. But we're doing something special. We're coming earlier. We're starting a new week and starting it with tefillah, and asking a Kadosh Baruch Hu to listen to the Rina and to the tefillah. There is intended here perhaps a guiding thought that even the slichas, with all of the severity implied, are intended to be beautiful, are intended to be something offered, like many tefillos are offered up as worship, to be seen with a sense of the graciousness given over as we offer, and accepted with a sense of how God's being appeased, how He appreciates our rina, our tefillah, something sweet, therefore, that's being implied in these words. Again, even though, of course, there's so much here that does say that a lot is riding on our prayer, that there is so much that the Jewish people really, really need. Some of it being, of course, to be forgiven for some of our misdeeds, such that we can bring ourselves to better times, personally, communally, nationally. Part of the beauty we try to instill into our slichos with our wonderful Baal Tefillah, with inspiring words beforehand. We have the pleasure tonight of continuing this special Shabbos with MG, with the Manhattan Jewish Experience. I want to thank once again Esther and Nachman Goodman, who have made this wonderful Shabbos possible, dedicating the Shabbaton to the memory of Esther's father, Yehuda ben Moshe Yitzchak, Tisser Alav HaShalom, and may the Neshama have Aliyah. Rabbi Pini Rosenthal received a degree from Touro College, a master's degree from Columbia University, and his smicha from the Yeshiva B'nai Torah in Far Rockaway from Rabbi Chait. Rabbi Pini was dean of the Torah Academy of Long Island for 10 years and has been teaching in local communities for the past 20 years. He has hundreds of classes available on yutorah.org and was significantly the lead guitarist for Schlock Rock for many years. Pini We're very, very happy to have you. Rabbi Rosenthal, thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. On behalf of myself, Rabbi Wiles, and the MG family, want to thank you and Rabbi Trump and the entire Young Israel of Lawrence Cedarhurst for welcoming our participants this past Shabbos. They had a great Shabbos. And these Shabbatons, these community Shabbatons that we have, are vital for their development as growing Jews. They don't have the opportunity necessarily to spend a whole Shabbos. They come in for a beginner service, a Kiddush, a Friday night dinner. But to pull it all together for an intense Shabbos experience where we have this Shabbos is vital. Invariably, one of our participants who is growing, this Shabbos becomes their first Shabbos of their Shomer Shabbos career. And that's just been the experience. It's just, it comes all together. They see the warm families, they see the warm community, and it's transformational experience. So on behalf of everyone, I'd like to thank you guys for welcoming us in. August 21st, last month, I walked into Tel HaShomer Hospital in Ramat Gan. I was with my cousin Tzvi. We were visiting his friend's son Boaz, who was injured. He was with a tank battalion about a week or two earlier that had gone into northern Gaza. They hit severe fire, mortars, etc. And the next thing he knew, he was in Ramat Gan Hospital without a right thumb and parts of both of his arms missing. Went there to give him some chizuk. You know, I brought my guitar. And he was in rather good spirits. On the good news front, his Tel HaShomer Hospital specializes in reconstructive surgery. And he does have 2 years of surgeries and rehabilitation ahead of him, but he's going to have a functional life. So while we were schmoozing, there was a woman that came to the door of the hospital room. And she peeked in. And so we looked at her and we offered to come on in. And she shared in Hebrew that she had come because she wanted to say thank you. She wanted to thank you to the soldiers that were injured for their service in protecting Klal Yisrael. And then she says, I don't have any words to say. She felt a little bit inhibited. So Boaz turned and said, look, say what you feel. And like a good Jewish woman, she found the words. And for the next 5 to 7 minutes, it was in very quick Hebrew, but the essential sentiment was that she found profoundly grateful of his sacrifice and all the young men that we watched the news on TV had done on behalf of herself, her family, Medinat Yisrael, Klal Yisrael. And I just was sitting there watching this experience, and it was just really blowing my mind. If you look at our first source here, Ram shares that kol mi sheyesh bo azus panim achzarios sones abrios ina gomel lahem chesed choshen lo bioser shema givonihu. Rather, shesimani Yisrael umakadosha baishanim rachmanim vegomel chasadim. The mark of the holy nation of Israel, they're meek, merciful, and kind. In that one experience, I saw someone, I was not sure if she was a Dati woman. It wasn't evident to me, but didn't make a difference. She took off time during the middle of her day to come to the hospital, and she was going room to room. And what she was doing, as those who had read reports from Israel, was not uncommon at all. When she'd left, Boaz shared with me that literally an hour earlier, a guy came into his room and said, the injury you got in Gaza? He said yes. Took out a check, wrote him a check for 1,000 shekelim, and left. Totally anonymous person. And this experience of an outpouring of chesed and kindness and support to the soldiers has been unbelievable. People were coming in. In fact, when the guys were coming in initially after the first days of Protective Edge, It was one. You walked in one room. One guy got 50 pizzas. I mean, it was just it was an overwhelming amount. In fact, the officials of the hospital had to start to, you know, keep the people back from bringing too much stuff. It was just they weren't able. It was affecting their capacity to be able to handle the wounded. So, the truth is, this summer I felt was a very special summer. We witnessed tremendous acts of chesed, and a month earlier, mid-June, when the three boys, Ayal, Gilad, and Naftali, were first kidnapped, I think I'm not alone that everybody was personally affected, felt the need to do something. And whether you were here in Israel or America, you know, whether giving tzedakah and helping out the troops that were searching the Hebron area, hoping to find the kidnappers, or reciting Tehillim, there was not a shul that was not doing that. And in Israel, the experience was unbelievable. One of Naftali's friends, who was in his yeshiva, Mokor Chaim, he shared that about what it was like to have during those 18 days when they were not certain what happened to the boys. And it was a very obviously very frightening experience. So they were reaching out to other yeshivas to come into the Kotel. We're going to have a big Tehillim event. And they are a Dati Lumi. And on the other side, they're reaching out to Haredim, who typically, tragically, don't work together so regularly. And the response was, no problem, we're there. They're by the Kotel, and they have a whole stack of Tehillim. And he tells me that 20 Chiloniot, 20 secular women came. And they said to him, David, we do not believe in God, but we want to say Tehillim with you. You know, that is not, you know, if you've been to Israel, this is not a normal phenomenon. And you knew the situation was extremely special when we heard in the news one of the most popular or famous anti-religious politicians, Yair Lapid. He went to one of the shivas, and he said to the woman there, he said, look, when I heard the three boys were kidnapped, I had a profound need to daven. There was only one problem. I have not been in a shul for 6 years since my son was bar mitzvah. I don't own a sitter. My father, Tommy Lapid, didn't own a sitter, but I was looking to hopefully find my grandfather's sitter. It was a remarkable thing. So there's something deep, a deep impact was experienced there. I think everybody saw that my father, who lives in Yerushalayim, the word got out, first of all, on the WhatsApp app and Facebook, that a lone soldier, Max Steinberg, was killed. And they were afraid that his two parents from Los Angeles were going to be sitting there by the Basic Forest by themselves. So they said to go support, people should come to show support. 30,000 people showed up to a person they did not know. So the question I want to ask is that this unbelievable experience of chesed, these experiences of tefillah, is it going to go all away? Is there anything we can try to capture that and extend it for the coming year? And is it by nature something that is unsustainable? So who thinks that these feelings of achdus and gemilah chasadim will remain with the yam? Raise your hand if you think it's going to remain long term. Who thinks it's going to dissipate? Right. So now the thing is that I think there is a good reason to think that's the case, because everybody here in New York who was here during 9/11 experienced a complete change in the sense of the general community. After New York was wounded by the loss of the Twin Towers, there was a sense of brotherly love that transcended any race, any color, any religion, and there was a level of optimism among the whole community that was unbelievable, palpable. Though if you remember back then, 13 years ago, and it lasted actually for several months. But now, my Rebbe has a good line. He says, inspiration has a short shelf life. So what do you do? How do you take this unbelievable moment and try to distill it and move it forward? The first thing is to do like you do after any kind of significant event. If you have a meeting with a client, which is very important, and you go with a colleague, you just go on? No, you have what they call the post-meeting meeting. You have to discuss and analyze all the things that happened in the meeting and figure out what to do moving forward. So one of the things that came out is that most people's approach to chesed, the basic level of chesed, is based on the principle of identification. You're like me. You're in pain. I will help you out. You're not like me. I don't care that much. It's just that simple. So here, we saw in Israel and America the distinction between Haredi, Chiloni, Dati Lumi, Ashkenazic, Sephardic, Israel and America. It made no difference. You really got a sense of that Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael was a reality. Now the question we have to ask though, is that really true? Or was it only true between June 15th and August 20th? The reality is it's always true. So the key point is that the challenge here and the principle to understand is that chesed, we have to go beyond the identification principle. To put it very simply, that we don't have to wait till tragedy hits and the normal distinctions and box we put people in, we have to wait till that gets eviscerated. Reality is, it's never true. So what really is the principle of sophisticated and mature chesed and tzedakah? Is that the question is, does this person fit into the class of people who are worthy of tzedakah and chesed? Yes or no? If so, I must act, I must respond, I must help out the person. To put it into a bumper sticker, the choice of doing chesed and tzedakah must be impersonal. The execution must be personal. In other words, is this person worthy? Am I chayev to give? Am I chayev to help the person in? That's the question. If it's the case, I must do it in a loving manner. Versus the reverse, which is I'm only going to do chesed if it hits me. But you see, that's very inconsistent. And oftentimes only waits until tragedy wakes us up and captures our attention. And you see this in halacha, that halacha has a very clear principle about how one does chesed and how does one does tzedakah. We have a thing called kedima. Okay, first thing is this person Jewish or not Jewish? The Jew gets priority. Okay, where is this Jew from? Is this Jew your relative or a member of your community? Your relative gets priority. Is he part of your community or another community? Your community gets priority. If it's another community versus Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael gets, according to many, gets priority, etc., etc. So you see already, the approach to chesed has to be, the mature approach to chesed has to be done in a principled manner, not purely reactive. And one thing that we saw this year is that reality is we don't have to wait till our brothers and sisters are losing arms and legs or unfortunately being nifter to see that these distinctions between Haredi, Chiloni, Ashkenazi, Sephardic are really superficial in character, and they're Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael, and we have to help out to the extent that we can. One experience that really captures this, I was speaking to a local administrator of a yeshiva, and he said to me, if my yeshiva was on the other side of the green line, our yeshiva would not have financial difficulties. What was he really saying? He's saying that there's certain kind of initiatives that have tremendous attraction, and that money and support can go off to a certain place in Eretz Yisrael, but the yeshiva itself, the rebbe itself, have not been paid for 2 months, and the money is coming literally from down the block and going 6,000 miles away. Now, we should support Eretz Yisrael, but the point is, that as far as, are we taking a principled approach, or are we taking purely a reactive approach? That's something to move forward for the coming year. I want to share with you that how does Ma'asim Tovim, and specifically deal with, you see in the Mar Makomos here, how Ma'asim Tovim weave into the Aseret Me'etzuvah, which we're about to begin the season here. So I want to take a look at this Rambam, source number 2, briefly. The Let's take a look. Afal pi shetkia shofar barash shon a gezeras akasav. Even though the shofar blowing is a decree of the Torah. Remez yeshbo. There's an allusion. Klomar. Ur yeshena mishinazchem. Wake up, O sleepy ones from your sleep. Hekitsu nirdam mitardam oseichem. Wake up, O slumbering ones from your deep slumber. Chavshu b'maseichem chizru b'tshuva zichru barachem. Inspect your deeds, return in tshuva, remember your Creator. And who are these sleepy ones? Elu hashochem esem es behevli esman. These are those who forget the truth during the vicissitudes of life. Shogim kol shenatzon behevel rig. They spend their time in emptiness and vanity. Asher lo yoel v'lo yatzo, which is not going to help. He beat you in nafsho seichem, look into your souls. Hey tivu darchechem malchechem, improve your ways and your deeds. V'yazov kolechem ekem darko ara u'machshavto asher lo tova. And abandon each one his evil path and his thoughts which are not good. The Ram identifies that what's the purpose of the shofar? It's to wake us up and to identify that life is short. What are our priorities? The clock is ticking. The master is waiting. But then the Ram does a very interesting move here. He says, Lefikach, therefore, Tzara kol adam shiir atzmo kol shana kula, ki lo chesyo zakai v'chesyo chayev. Person has to look himself being equally bound between merit and sin. V'chein kol olam, the whole world is in the balance. Half in merit, half in sin. Do one sin. He's going to put the entire world to the side of sin. The garm lam shchata and cause destruction. Awesome mitzvah achas, does one mitzvah. He puts the entire world to the merit side. And there is salvation and redemption. So the question here, and then the Ram extends, which is what we're going to do tonight. Because of this principle, all of Israel, the house of Israel, is custom to increase in charity, good deeds, engage in mitzvot from Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur more the entire year. V'nogu kulam lakum b'layla b'aseret yemei elu, and to get up early in the 10 days. The Ram only had during 10 days. We have it more. Ulispal bate knesios v'divrei tachanunim v'divrei kibushim atyero hayom, and to be involved in supplications and words of self conquest until daybreak. So I have a couple of questions here, which is, what is the lefikach? What is the demand that we view ourselves exactly in the middle? I mean, is it really true that we are, in fact, is it possible, realistically, that we're exactly 50-50? Is that a realistic phenomenon? And the question that I think many people feel is that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, person's going to go to shul a lot, and do tzedakah and ma'asim tovim, but then, is it really just theater? Like, we just like trying to fake Hashem out that we're really good guys? But reality, come Simchas Torah, we're pretty much back the way we were before. So what really is this? So why are we, what are we trying to accomplish? If the Ram says that we must view ourselves that every deed has a cosmic implication, either putting the world to Schus or a Chas V'Shalom, a Chet, Shua or hashkasa, destruction or salvation. So that should be the reality all year round. You should be engaged in that mentality all year round. What is the idea of just doing for 10 days? Manasha. Either it's something which is a mandate for us to be engaged in all year round, or not. So here, in order to understand this, I want to take an analogy by the NFL. Here, as you know, there are 32 NFL teams, and all NFL teams this summer dedicate 4 to 5 weeks in basic training. Those who know football know that they start with 90 players and they involve scrimmages and intense conditioning. They're working through the strategies, they're watching tape, they're working 12, 14 hours a day. It's a brutal thing, and in fact, many of them come back injured. It's a tremendously intense experience. And then comes Labor Day. Coach picks up the phone and makes 37 phone calls. And what does he tell those guys? You're cut. You're not making the team, even though you worked unbelievably hard. The other 53 are asked to move on, continue with the team. Now, there are individual players in the NFL who can maintain this level of conditioning throughout the entire year. One example, wide receiver Jerry Rice. Those who remember Jerry Rice, he was a wide receiver for 20 years on the San Francisco 49ers. He has 3 Super Bowl rings. He was Pro Bowl for 12 times. And one could argue, definitely the best wide receiver of all time, arguably the best NFL player of all time. And one of the things that other players noticed about him was that his tremendous work ethic and dedication to the game. He played 303 games in a row, did not miss a game, and over his entire 20 years, missed only 10 games. One was for a 7-game stretch. And which is remarkable because you're talking about a wide receiver, basically people running after you to crush you. That is the goal of covering a wide receiver. And yet his success was unbelievable. And one of his menhagim, after Super Bowl or the playoffs, he would take 2 weeks off. And then he would have this following regimen. He lived in the San Francisco area, there's a local nature reserve that has a 2.25-mile hill/mountain. He would sprint up it every day, 7 days a week, among his other conditioning. So he was always in that summer training level of conditioning. And he was really, that's why he was a phenomenal wide receiver and a phenomenal player. To translate it back to the Rambam, the Jerry Rices of the world, by analogy, are the tzaddikim. They hear the shofar all year round. Every maisa they do, they carefully calculate. They take their life and their deeds and their well, they spend their time in very, very carefully. There is no waste. If you're Jerry Rice, you're not wasting time. What you eat is very calculated. How much time you can do conditioning is very calculated. It's cheshbon out, and the dedication and the focus is outstanding. Kavana, no problem. And then there's us. We need a basic training. We need a spring training. We need the summer training, where we need to focus in on the core principles. We need to work out. We need to dig in. Not because we're going to fake a Kadosh Baruch Hu out, which is an impossibility, because we're hoping for a level of growth and focus that we can then take on for the rest of the season. That is the idea. It's not that we're faking Kadosh Baruch Hu out. The goal is that during this Aseret Mei Teshuva period, which we're starting tonight officially with the Slichas, is to get a level of focus and inspiration and development, a measure of growth that we can then take for the balance of the year. The shofar is really the coach's whistle, telling us we got to focus. We got to focus on the important things. Time is short. The master is waiting, and that's it. And one thing we definitely don't want to do: we don't want to get cut. We're not interested in getting cut. So, the main point here is that the slichas, the shofar, is designed to get us back in the zone. It is the summertime training camp. We work a little hard. We're coming out here. We in shul at midnight. We had a long day. It's exhausting already. Extra tefillah, extra mitzvos, extra staka. Hopefully, with a develop a measure of growth. Of course, tshuva. Then we get to the role of slichos. What are slichos? What are we doing it for? The Rama has a very interesting term there. He calls it divrei kibushim. Lichvosh is to conquer. Who are we conquering? We're really conquering ourselves. What are we trying to... When you read the slichas, you read them in English, you'll see what's trying to be said here. We're trying to puncture our natural sense of superiority, and complacency, and which is natural for all people to feel, that essentially that I'm perfect, that I'm wonderful. The sleepless, if you read the text, will not allow you to have that illusion. Now the reality is that in 2014, as a from Jew, it's very hard to get into this state of mind, because, quite frankly, we've had tremendous success. You go on Central Avenue, there's kosher restaurants as far as the eye can see. We got shuls, we got yeshivas, we got kolim, we got gamaks. Really, it's the Yemos HaMashiach. The Mashiach has come, and it's us. And if you want to go to Eretz Yisrael, we step on a plane, 13 hours later, we're at the Kotel. We're living a life that our ancestors, even our grandparents, could not even imagine. What we have, as far as America, we have relatively zero persecution. There is not a job that is not acceptable to a Jew, even a frum Jew. My great grandfather, couldn't hold down a job because he had to work on Shabbos and he had to quit the job. We don't have these conferences anymore. You can go to Ivy League schools; they'll let you in, even for a kippah. So really, the bracha of America puts a tremendous challenge on us, because, quite frankly, we don't need to change at all. We don't have to improve at all. We don't need any growth at all. But let me just pull briefly the curtain away a little bit. With all our success, and it is good success, and we should feel proud about it, the reality is that outside the frum bubble, 71% of non-Orthodox Jews are going to intermarry. Okay, if you work in a regular bank or you work with non-frum people, you see it. Then you come back into our bubble in the five towns and Teaneck, whatever, and now we're in the frum world. But the world, which is 98% of America, they're going to the door and they're not coming back, unfortunately. Let's move a little closer to home. Based on our best statistics, 10 to 20% of our children, will go off the derech. Ein bash ein sham meis. Just look. You know. Third challenge. Roughly 1 out of 5 adult children are not going to get married. I'm in the Upper West Side. There are thousands of singles. Thousands. There is a real shit-up crisis. It's not a joke. So the bottom line is, on one hand, we should feel good about the yeshivas and the shuls and the education that we have created, but there is still plenty of work to do. The job is not done. We should not feel complacent. The bottom line is that the Mashiach is not here. And the reality is, we turn to Akash Baruch Hu for one thing. We're going to talk, and the main theme of the whole Slichas is Hashem, Hashem, kel rachum v'chanan. What are we really saying? Essentially, we're saying that really, we as a community, we have hate. It's truth. And really, if it wasn't for Akash Baruch Hu's rachamim, we wouldn't even get another year of growth available to us. We really asking for Akash Baruch Hu to give us, as an extension of our chesed, if we do an extra measure of growth to get the year to improve even more. But that is an act of chesed. So that really is a humbling thought. That's a divrei kibushim. That the bottom line is, if it wasn't for God's chesed, we wouldn't be able to go for another, even for another minute. So I just want to end up that I think we as a community have a lot to be proud about. But the slichas, which is a little bit, which is also sharing with us, we have what to work for. And I want to wish everybody a good Geben Shor. Should be a Seretz Mei Tshuva, which is filled with growth and development and reflection and tshuva. And we should be a tremendous chus for us. And everybody should have a chesiva, the chesima tova. Thank you so much. Yeah, okay.